swiftly to Jim Fruchterman, president of the Benetech Initiative. An engineer and technology entrepreneur, Jim Fruchterman has been a rocket scientist, founded the foremost optical character recognition manufacturer, and developed a successful line of reading machines for the blind. Fruchterman co-founded Kalera Recognition Systems in 1982, a company that developed character recognition, allowing computers to read virtually all printed text. In 1989, he started Arkham Stone, a 501c3 non-profit social enterprise, to produce reading machines for the disabled community based on the Kalera technology. Following the sale of the Arkham Stone product line in 2000, Fruchterman used all of the resulting capital to found Benetech with an explicit goal of using the power of technology to serve humanity. He's also been active in public service, serving two stints on U.S. federal advisory committees, plus a current term as a board member of the National Gathering of Social Entrepreneurs. In addition, Fruchterman is a co-founder, director, and the chief financial officer for RAF Technology, Inc., the developer of high-end OCR technology used by the U.S. Postal Service to route the mail. His overriding interest is in making technology adapt to the needs of people rather than the reverse. Jim.
Thank you very much, Simon. I'm delighted for the opportunity to speak to you here on a topic that I'm very passionate about, the application of technology to the needs of all people. My background, you've just heard, and my skill was in working on making computers able to perceive the world. At my first company in the 80s, we built a prototype of a reading machine for the blind based on our character recognition technology. And the idea was that it would scan the page and then read it aloud to the blind person. However, I couldn't convince my venture capital investors that we should produce this product because the market size was less than $1 million per year, and they had invested over $25 million in my firm. We couldn't afford to go after a great social opportunity that was not a sufficient business opportunity. And that's the problem with the technology field today. There's a huge gap between what's possible and what's profitable, what could be break-even, and what can deliver the 50% a year rate of return that a venture investment needs to deliver to its investors, the pension funds and private investors of the world. Many Silicon Valley technologists would love to work on socially important problems, but we failed to give them models. And after the dot-com bust, there's a lot of them who'd love any job. I'm going to give you a couple of models for bridging this gap between possibility and profitability. The first is social enterprise, a technology venture operated inside a nonprofit organization with two bottom lines, a financial and a social bottom line. Instead of delivering maximum returns to shareholders, the goal is to deliver the maximum good while being sustainable, generally break even from revenues. By operating it as an enterprise, the technology user is a customer, not the recipient of charity. This provides market feedback, keeps us honest, and has us focus on what the customer really needs. My first social enterprise was Arkham Stone, and we became the world's leading maker of reading machines for the blind, which was a $5 million a year enterprise that operated slightly above break even. And for over a decade, we could deliver that social good without requiring more capital from investors, for-profit or non-profit investors. Technology is very cheap to replicate once it's created. That's one of the reasons why companies like Microsoft are so incredibly wealthy. In the social context, that means that it costs very little to replicate this for social applications. You can do such things as cross-subsidization. Charge a person in Europe or America a very different price than you might charge someone in a developing part of the world. Yet, the price could be accessible to each of those individuals and provide enough revenue to sustain the entity. The second model I want to talk about is the open source free software model. So much of our intellectual property is coming under great control. And this is not the essence of the social bargain we originally made with people in my community, the community of people who innovated and invented things. And if I look at the NGOs in the developing world and many people, they're often using pirated Microsoft software for their IT needs. And Microsoft is going to make this very difficult, both technically and legally. I know human rights NGOs in Central America that have gotten bills for more than $25,000 because they've been using Microsoft software illegally. We need to give those people in the next 2 years a choice to be legally compliant and pay for commercial software on the prices that we hope the providers will make more accessible to them than they are today, or to have access to free software solutions that really solve their problems. I think that open source offers an opportunity to reverse the IT development dynamic, where hard currency flows from the developing world to Redmond, Washington, and other developed nation providers. By providing access to the actual building blocks of technology, we could slow that dynamic and potentially even reverse it. The barriers to this technology development are getting smaller and smaller, and I think this is an extremely important issue. We also need to keep the social contract between intellectual property creators and society. IP protections were there to encourage inventors, companies, authors to create social value first. So many of the same arguments that you've heard about patents and AIDS drugs, you're going to be hearing in other areas of technology in the future years. And I think it's important to have those debates in IT just the same. The great news is that the barriers to technology use are decreasing. In a few years, a used cell phone will have the processing power of a recent model PC and cost $10 or $20. There'll be so much good we could do with a platform like that, with the software that goes with it. It could read for the person who can't read, speak for the person who can't speak, hear for the person who can't hear, and perhaps remember for the person who can't remember. So I have lots of exciting ideas that are just waiting to be done. And they're not just my ideas. They come out of the technology community waiting for a way to be made real. So I can imagine today putting together a 20,000 volume library of books that could go into a small village for less than $500. A Japanese game machine, a TV, and a stack of 10 DVDs. An e-book that actually solves a problem that really needs to be solved. And it could also be an audiobook for people who are illiterate or people who can't read because of disability. We've already launched a project here in the United States called Bookshare.org, which is a legally permitted hybrid between Napster and the Talking Book Program of the Library of Congress, where blind people all over the country scan in books and share them with other members of their community. And we now have more than 10,000 books, and we're growing rapidly. We have that available right now in the US, and we're aiming to expand that worldwide. Technology is an immensely powerful tool, and the military and commercial applications often get done first. But the social applications in education, development, justice, and health are tremendous. And my last example is a project that we're doing for human rights organizations that we're now beta testing in Sri Lanka and in the coming months in Central America and Eastern Europe and Central Asia. By using open source and free software techniques, we're giving human rights groups the same kind of technologies that the human rights perpetrators, the same kind of information technologies that the perpetrators of human rights violations have at their control, trying to equalize the imbalance between the defenders of human rights and the people who violate them. We built that project for less than $1 million, peanuts by Silicon Valley standards, and yet the return on investment society is going to be tremendous. So I encourage all of us to work on ensuring that technology fully serves all of humanity, the real people who have real needs. It's waiting for us. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jim. Now it's my great pleasure to introduce